This is the Authentic Persuasion Show. Hey there, and welcome to episode 624 of the Authentic Persuasion Show. My name is Jason Cutter. This is the Cliff Notes summary expanded soapbox episode based on my conversation with Dr. Michelle Welliver from Susquehanna University. So we had our three-part conversation that went live this week, and in these conversations, one of the things that happens is the guest says some amazing things, says some things that just totally stand out, and I'm making notes the whole time. I am just as curious as a host as I would be if I was just listening to an episode, maybe even more, and I'm just taking tons of notes. And so I use this as an opportunity to get on my soapbox to confirm or, you know, expand on the things that they say, because during the episodes, I want the guest to be the highlight. I do my best as a host to not make the show about me. I've been on podcasts where it's not like that, where the host, you know, as soon as I'm done talking as a guest, the host is just talking about their stuff or using it as an opportunity to sell their services on their podcast, even though I'm the guest. And I've listened to other ones where it's like that. And I think a conversation is great. I think some back and forth is great. I think that's good if it's a co-host situation or if there's enough time for that. In this case here, there's so much that I want to ask. There's so much that I want to find out about that even doing it over three episodes is tough. If you're a longtime listener of the show or if you track any of this, you know that my episodes go longer and longer. There's sometimes where I just can't stop. And my goal was 3 20-minute episodes, and then they become 3 30-minute episodes because there's so much from the guest. So anyway, that's why I'm doing this. That's why I'm here, because in my conversation with Dr. Michelle, there was so many things that she said that now I want to use this as my place to kind of expand on that. It's not the Cliff Notes, right? I'm not breaking down everything. I guess I should stop calling it the Cliff Notes. It's really the biggest gems that stood out for me. I just want to highlight them and expand on it, like take it to an additional level. So one of the biggest things that comes up with authentic persuasion and in the conversations that I have and the questions that I ask people and the questions that I get is, how do you be authentic and act authentic in a professional role versus maybe in your personal life? Now, the way that I tackle that is that I am pretty much the same. I don't think there's deviation. Now, there might be professional version of me, might be a little bit different, but I think I'm pretty much the same all the time. And like in the way that I talk, in the way that I act, the way that I handle myself, the way that I interact with people. If I'm like at a conference and I'm networking and I'm having fun and I'm saying things, like it's the same thing I would do at the grocery store with people. Like there's no different motivation for me to act a certain way because, oh, there's an outcome that I want to get. Again, if you jump on a Zoom call with me and we're meeting or you hire me to help your team, and then you run into me at the store or the mall, it's going to be the same thing. And there's always that balance, right? It's like if you've ever, as a kid, ran into a teacher at the store, saw them where they weren't in teacher mode, dressed for being a teacher and that kind of thing. It, like I remember that as a kid, it always felt weird. It felt really strange. Like this is not the person I deal with and that teaches me, and who is this person? And wait, they have a life and this is really odd and strange. Like I don't ever want that. Now there's this balance, right? Because there's professional you and then there's personal you. I think it's the same person all the time. Now there's a professional version of you. Maybe you're not swearing. Maybe you're not talking about the stuff that you would talk about with your friends. But there's a professional you, as Michelle said. And the biggest thing that she pointed out that I absolutely love is style flexing. Now, make sure to listen to the episode around the 22, 23-minute mark. Absolutely amazing is that it's about changing your communication style, not your authenticity, not who you are, not your personality, not your behaviors, but your communication style to fit what the other person is wanting or what will help them the most. A lot of times people don't know what they want, and it's really not about mirroring. The biggest issue I have is with the constant thought that the goal is to mirror, right? If somebody is really amped up and excited, you should be amped up, excited. If they're talking fast, you should talk fast. If they talk slow, you should talk slow, right? If they use certain words, you should use certain words. And I think you want to make sure that the other person sees you as a friendly, as on their side, as somebody they can trust. But if somebody is talking slow and analytical, You don't want to be over the top the other way and extroverted because that will repel them, right? That'll set off alarms. But if you're slow and analytical with them, nothing is going to get done, right? If you're excited and talking fast and the other person is excited and talking fast, nothing will get done, I promise. Because the problem is that two excited extroverts won't buy or sell anything. Like, they may talk about it, but they're not going to execute on things. And so it's not about mirroring. I think mirroring is really dangerous advice for people who think they've got to do that, especially manipulative mirroring, which is, oh, you just crossed your legs, I got to cross my legs. Oh, you just put your hand on your chin. Oh, if you're doing that, I should do that too, because I want to mirror you so that I'm doing what you're doing, so there's a connection. Like, I think that's gross and terrible advice, and I think it's very misleading, which is why I love what Dr. Michelle said, which is style flexing, changing your communication style. When you're dealing with an analytical person as a potential customer, the last thing you want to do is be analytical, because then you'll both go into this analysis paralysis death spiral. Trust me. You also don't want to be extroverted, outgoing, and too loud and crazy, because that will repel them. So you have to find a different balance that's still giving them what they need, but then moving things forward, right? If somebody is a very controlling type person, they've got to be in control. They think they're right about everything. If you come at them the same way, it's going to be terrible. It's going to be a battle of the wills, and the customer is always right, and the non-customer is even more righter, and you will lose. I promise. You cannot win by going at somebody like that. You literally need jujitsu instead of coming straight at them. And so style flexing is amazing. Absolutely love that. Changing your communication style to communicate in a way that works for them, not mirrors them, but works to move them forward. And I think that is so important. The other part she said in part one, we're talking about authenticity, is what we teach in sales is what you need to know in life. And that's what I say all the time. Everything in life is sales. And I even like it better, which is a version of that, which is everyone is in sales, right? You're in sales, you're persuading people, you're influencing people, you're doing things with people all the time in life, whether it's where do we want to go for dinner? What movie do we want to watch? What's going on here? Do you want to be in a relationship? Like, what should we do about this? Like, it's relationships, and it's all around these principles, which I think are so important. So just remember that. A lot of people think, oh, I don't need to learn about sales because I'm not in sales. It's like, all of life is about relationships, and all relationships are about persuasion and influence on one way or the other. All right, part two, we talk about sales process, persuasion, right? The intentional act of moving the right people forward to a better place, right? Across the finish line. And the key is that she said is that they have to have a problem they know that they can solve with our product. And now there's a lot of times that people like, okay, the Sandler method is take somebody who's healthy and well, and then find out how they're sick, and then make them realize they're sick, and then make them feel so much pain that they beg for a solution. And I think some of that is valid, which is most people either don't know they have a problem or don't want to admit they have a problem. And some of that awareness combined with a challenger and maybe some spin stuff in there, I think there's some valid nature to it. I think a lot of it comes down to intentions and manipulation versus persuasion, where manipulation is all about let me do fear mongering and using pain and using negativity and selling from that place, which I think is terrible and really pushes off a lot of people. But ultimately, the final result and the way that you close deals is they have to know that they have a problem that they know that they can solve with your solution. Now, it's two different things, right? So you have to have a process built around helping them identify what their problem is in a authentic way. And then you have to have a process, which is why I have my authentic persuasion pathway, to help them see that you have the solution that can solve it if you do, right? Hopefully the answer is you do. If not, you'll send them on their way. And then you can move them forward. What you don't want to do is push features and benefits on people. That mode is over. That doesn't work. The other part she said, and I love this about sales process because I think this is something I get all the time as well, is don't ever leave rapport building to chance, right? You've got to use rapport building to give you credibility in the moment, in the relationship, in the beginning to move it forward so that you can get to a place of empathy and trust. Don't leave rapport building to chance. So many people are like, hey, oh, what about the weather? And what about this? And what about that? You have to have a strategy and a plan, which sounds weird. How do you strategically build authentic rapport? There's ways to do it. There's some great things that you can do. If you have any questions about that or you want any help with that, let me know. You can always reach out to me, jason@cutterconsultinggroup.com, or find me on LinkedIn and send me a message there. But there's definitely some things you can do to build authentic rapport with intentionality and planning. And again, that sounds really weird, but it's very possible. Next, she said in this part two, is buyers want to be listened to. I say this over and over again. I'm going to keep saying it over and over again because I see it as a constant problem. Genuinely, you have to want to help them, right? And remember, like, and she quoted Zig Ziglar, people want to talk about themselves. What's in it for me? They want to talk about themselves, and you want to find out what they need. That's the whole point of the diagnosis portion of your sales process, is figuring out what they want, what they need, where they're at, where they would rather be at, where they're moving towards, and then where does your solution fit in? And again, she said this, best way to persuade is to understand what their problem is. So many people think the best way to persuade is I have this or I have that, I've got this, I've got to do this, I got to track. No, you got to understand where they're at. And then literally, if you have the solution, then move them forward. Like, that's it. And that's really the key, is take that from that episode as far as the sales process goes, is really meeting that person where they are and what they need and what you can do to help them get to a better place. Again, it isn't about helping them get out of pain. Some people are hoping for gain, right? That is possible, right? Maybe someone is joining a gym because they have pain, they're unhealthy. Some people are like, I just want to get in shape and be in better shape for summer, for beach season, like whatever, right? That's hope for gain. That's not avoiding pain. Unless you really want to go fear-mongering and say, oh, you want to avoid the pain of shame and not being able to take your, you know, shirt off, or not be in a bathing suit at the beach and people are going to mock you. Like, you could sell that way, but that's just negative. Like, no. What about the hope for gain? So just focus on that. And then lastly, part three of the conversation, all about the future of sales. And really the big punchline from the conversation we had is it goes back to communication. How do they want to buy? And that's the theme. If you've been listening to these episodes of this season 7 with sales professional educators, is that it's really about how do the buyers want to buy. That's what the research is showing. That's what the experiences show. That's what companies are experiencing. That's what top salespeople understand, is it's all about communication and then a sales process about how they want to buy, moving them forward, and not just letting it happen by chance, not being an order taker where they're calling all the shots, but meeting them where they are, especially from a communication, whether it's chat, email, SMS, phone calls, video, in person. Like, you have to figure out where they are, where they, how they want to be communicated, and then meet them there and then move them forward in the process, right? You're not going to do the whole sale via email or text or chat. At some point it's a phone call, some point it's video, some point it's in person, depending on what you're selling and how that works. But you have to start where they are, instead of being self-centered like a lot of sales organizations are, which is, no, this is our process. Everyone has to fill out this lead sheet on the form, on the website, and then we have to book a demo so that we can tell you what the pricing is, and you have to go through our process and our hoops, whether you like it or not. And the problem with that is your potential buyers, they have a choice. You think they don't have a choice. You think you're amazing. They see you as a commodity, which means I don't want to play your game, which means I'm going to go find another CRM or another phone system or somebody else that is meeting me where I want to be at, who can help me, because at the end of the day, I have a goal or I have a need or I have a situation I need to fix, and your solution doesn't matter as much as my situation. And so I'm not going to play your games, and I want the sales experience that I have, which is why I keep saying that all that matters is the sales experience from their perspective. And that's what they're looking for most. So please make sure to check out these three parts. Make sure to share these episodes. I say it from time to time. I know it's in the outro for the show and the recording part, but please make sure to engage with these, share these episodes. follow the YouTube, like subscribe to the YouTube channel, right? It's Jason Cutter on YouTube. Subscribe, like these videos, comment on them. All of that helps get these messages out so that we can shift the way sales is done. When we do that, then it's going to be a better experience for everybody as customers, because we're going to get what we want because we're going to be dealing with sales professionals.